Let's get started. So, do introductions here. I'm Helen Devery, Chair of DEEP.
Rosie Schell, Public Works.
Andrew Mentler, PLS Engineer.
Steve Hagan, Public Works Wastewater. Mike Overton, Olson Engineer.
Mike Bomar, SWCA.
Dan Mazzola, Community Development.
Andy Safari, Public Works.
And the audience back here.
Josh Kahn, Public Works.
Brent Davis, Environmental Services.
Great, thanks. And just a reminder here, it's on the agenda every time that the meeting's being recorded and the audio will be posted on the county's website. So has everyone had a chance to review the minutes? Any questions?
I have, and we've too long.
Good. Actually, can I ask a question? I saw a couple of paragraphs in here which I thought was for the meeting prior to last time, like the Commissioner Maddox.
He did last time. So I reviewed both those paragraphs.
Same discussion though.
Yes.
That's same discussion. I wasn't there. I wasn't there last time. That's why I thought, you know, I think I've heard this, but I wasn't there. So.
Yeah, the question that I asked was asked last time.
So oh, okay.
Paragraph
yeah,
was,
very good.
Okay, so we had a motion. Was there a second? Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. And so the next on the agenda is a review of upcoming events. And Ali Gregg usually does this. So it's the second page, 2 of 2 here.
Right.
So we've got a whole series of Board of County Commissioners hearings on the 2013 annual review of dockets, amending the 10-year growth management, comprehensive plan, map and zone. That's next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Also is the interim land use regulation on marijuana related facilities. That's also next Tuesday at 10 a.m. And then there's a work session on the vacant buildable lands inventory, which is on Wednesday the 9th at 10 a.m.
Who's heading up that work? Is staff heading up that work session?
The
vacant buildable lands
inventory? Yeah, I believe it is the community planning.
Okay.
Oliver.
Do they have any connection or have they been in talks with RGF on their work that they've done on the buildable lands inventory at all?
No, sure.
Because I know a lot of that work's already been done and there might be a duplication of efforts.
And I think what we'd asked for, Ali, was that Oliver would come back and update us on the comprehensive plan process. And if this is the first step in it, if we could maybe have a report back on the vacant buildable lands inventory and what's gone into that analysis would be really helpful. Because I think this is the first time we've seen this landing on an agenda.
And I don't know if that's probably vacant buildable lands for all zones.
Yeah. And then the next is the work session on the 16th on the fall biannuals, and we'll talk about that here today. October 29th, hearing on the kennel code amendments. And then on October 30th, a work session on the Discovery Fairgrounds sub-area plan. On October 30th, work session on the surface mining overlay district, which we've already looked at. And then on November 13th, the Board of Commissioners work session on the Economic Development Action Team. And I've been asked, I'm also on the CREDC Executive Board and I chair their Committee on Lands for Jobs. So I've been asked to participate in that and give them an update on some of the work that we've done at CREDC. And then for the rest of the page here, the Planning Commission work sessions and hearings. So the Planning Commission work session on the Surface Mining Overlay District, that's on October 3rd. We've already provided input to the ordinance. And then a hearing that's continued from September on the 17th. So any questions about those upcoming work sessions or hearings or anything that we should be participating
in? Did you write that surface mining overlay?
I was accessory to it. I went to some of the sessions, with the advisory committee, but not all of them.
I know it's been a hot button topic since it's been continued. I'd be interested to see what, if any, sort of changes come out of either the board or planning commission's hearings.
Yeah, and I really haven't been involved in what property should be, given the overlay. I've been letting the planning that entirely. I was just I was there for some of the code work, and I don't think they've even discussed the code.
So it's more
in the
where it's to be placed.
Yeah, you know, I think there was
rather than the code itself.
From what I saw at the one hearing, I started that it was a lot of people Livingston Mountain were upset. There was a lot of testimony against that expanding the overlay there.
Yeah, who was thinking that?
Again, if we can have Mike check back in with us, because it was a couple of deep meetings ago that he gave us an outline of.
And if there are any changes to the code, I don't think he really needs to.
Well, there are changes proposed to the code. They just haven't. I don't think they've even discussed them in the hearings yet.
I see. So we're still talking about where
it goes.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Okay. There's no correspondence that's in the packet here.
For biannual code revision, is there going to be a representative that you include probably?
Well, we need to go through it today, right, and then we'll have a discussion about whether or not there's anything that Dave wants to participate in and respond to.
Okay.
And Jan, real quick before we hop into that, is there any workshop on that yet? On the correspondence?
I
didn't see it on the schedule.
Having the board work session is first.
Okay.
With findings next for the 16th.
Okay.
And that's not the hearing, that's just the work session?
Yes.
Because I'd like to participate in that if it's possible, but I might be in Olympia for the stormwater appeal.
So the work session is on the October 16th at 11 o'clock.
Yeah. So. Those 3 days. Okay. I'm up there.
Well,
I don't mean to interrupt your meeting, but I always do. But it's a good interrupt. It's saying, like, what can I do to help you? I had a question. Somebody had suggested recently that when you pay your fees, rather than up front, it'd be better if you pay them at time of occupancy. Is that a realistic request?
Which is?
Well, I'm not sure which one should make.
Impact fee, that's been an ongoing discussion on impact fees, for sure.
Okay.
I haven't heard that come up for your review fees. I don't know what they're talking about.
Rather than whatever process, the question is, should it come through you guys, or are you interested in that, or whatever? So I just want to let you know you have a year, and what can we do to help you to make you as successful as you can be without us standing in the way and make it difficult? But that's just one thing I possibly potentially agree on. I can't make it happen, but I'd like to be able to know if it's something that you want, if you're interested in pursuing.
So you've been approached with an idea of paying what we're assuming the impact fee is at the time of building occupancy rather than at the time of building permit issuance.
Yes. And that would be for residential.
Yeah, okay.
There's been an ongoing discussion about that and a request for that for impact fees.
Okay.
For other fees, that we haven't really discussed that, I think, logistically.
I don't see how that would work.
Yeah, and I don't think it'd be fair to staff necessarily. So, to be taken like an honest, crack at it, staff has to do the work, and you have to pay them, and then you do it. There's a lot. There's significant chance that development decides to pull. And not go through. So if they don't pay their fees up front for the review and county's done the work, then they have really no hammer for it.
I'm glad you're thinking of the staff down there and also make sure that funding happens. Right? Any other way I can help you at all?
Okay. Just a note on the biggest pushback that we get, at the state level of working on legislation to kind of create a uniform ability to delay the impact fees. It's for some projects, it's very important, but school everything. Impact fee is the big stickler there, and there's a lot of pushback from that group. And that's usually where we end up, and that's usually what stalls that conversation. So it'd be good to have an early on conversation if that's the direction that the board is looking at going, and the schools to figure out where to make that work.
Pushback from the schools?
Just in general, to be able to delay those impacts. So if you're talking about park, if you're talking about traffic, whatever else, this is typically not a big of an issue. The schools would typically testified in strong opposition to that type of
payment. Or to delay of payment.
Right. In other words, the schools don't want the fee to pay.
They want it sooner.
Yeah,
which is understandable.
Yeah.
So you only take the battles on the most minimal first, and so that's probably not one of those. So if there be something else when it comes to impact, the traffic impact fees or whatever, I'm not saying this is what we're going to do. I'm saying I'm listening. I heard something. I don't know if there'd be anything to it. But if you, whatever ideas you have that what we can do to help to consider to present to the board, the commission, I encourage you to ask and ask directly, and then we can work with our staff to find out how realistic that is. But I'm good.
Can I take the opportunity? I know you probably hear all the complaints, but there has, just from working on a lot of projects in the county, staff has been on multiple occasions just very problem-solving oriented, and they've been going out of their way to help some of these projects get through. So I'm sure you hear a lot about the stuff that doesn't go well, so I want you to hear when stuff does go. And so, does go well. And there's a lot of, these projects aren't always simple. They're complicated. They're complex issues. There's a lot of competing interests, and you know your staff does a pretty good job, and they're trying hard. So.
Yes, and I have heard that. And when I go down and I listen to them, I mean, I hear all the good reports. So yeah, I'm not just started thinking they're all perks down there like that. They're really, we have very good people down here, and I just want to make sure that they have the right processes and the right help. In order to make sure that they are successful, we're not demanding too much from them, or raising
children. I would echo what Aaron said. Last couple of projects that I've had, I've sent emails to staff indicating our thanks and kind of giving them the kudos, the necessary kudos.
Well, I mean, if you had examples, I'd be happy to sit down with you sometime and go over those.
Like, examples of how to do better.
A lot of projects are work in progress. You know, one example, and Ali knows about this, recording final plans. Mm-hmm. We're trying to work through simplifying that process. In going through this, there's been a lot more communication between applicants and staff. And I think everyone on both sides is realizing how complex it is and some of the frustrations that the applicants deal with getting those things recorded. There's so many moving pieces. Yeah. And these projects get so far, it's like you're at the 5-yard line, and then getting that extra 5 yards to finish the project off is challenging sometimes. Well, and you know, Ali's been very involved in that. Grant's been very involved in that.
Yeah. So you've got a very willing staff working really hard. You're working with them in order to get through these processes that are challenging and difficult. So I would say they to the degree that we can grant some relief from those difficult processes, those policies that say it's got to be that way, ask yourself, does it have to be this way? Is this changeable?
So we do.
Like, we can make life easier.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't heard of anything coming to my desk, so I would say make sure it gets those requests, get up the chain of command, and it's not like I'm going to trump anything, but at least I'll engage with the staff to learn more about it, to see what we can do to help them solve that problem.
And it's part policy, and it's part personality and attitude. And having staff be problem solvers, sometimes I think does way more than even a policy.
Oh yeah.
In a code section. You want to have the right people doing the right job with the right attitude, and you want to be working on things together. Yeah. And that's where I think I've seen the most progress of what we've done. And this board tries to do that. It's one of our goals. So.
Yeah, that's great. No policy can ever compensate for an unwilling staff. But staff can make a bad policy still workable. But we can make a bad policy better policy if we know how. We get the feedback. Anything else?
No, we're here to serve you, though. So we're advisors, too.
We're here to serve you guys.
Thank you.
Okay, so we've been through the upcoming events, no correspondence, and then Eric, could you give us an update on the ADA subcommittee?
Yes, so there's not a lot to update on. We have had communication with ASCE, and they're going to put together a subcommittee. Mm-hmm. I've had a few emails back and forth on who might be interested in it, and what's kind of holding it up is they haven't had a meeting since we talked to them. So at their next meeting, they're going to discuss it. Their next meeting is trying to set up a debate between the mayoral candidates. And there's been some conflicting schedules. So as soon as they get that scheduled, we'll have the meeting and hopefully we move forward.
Actually, I received an email from Dan Schaefer, and he was asking me what this should be all about. What are the issues, and who should be at the table, and you know what issues, what is going to be the production of this committee. and I was just about to finish the email before I come here, so I will send that to him, at least my opinion, and I can copy you or whoever
sure.
would like to be
and Stan
copied.
Works for our firm, so I've had a couple of conversations with him as well.
Right.
So. Okay. Any member announcements?
I just want to announce, I'm not going to be there at the meeting next month because we have a BIW, the fall meeting is...
Oh yeah, I'm gone as well.
Yeah, so we have a pretty heavy agenda for next month. The agenda for this month is really short. Marty had to go out of town, so the update on the fees is coming next month. That's going to be added, so it's a really full agenda. So if we can make sure that everybody else is here.
I know he's gone too.
I'm gone as well.
Is it important enough to maybe reschedule?
Open on the 14th.
Yeah, I could do the 14th.
So Tuesday?
Because Eric, you've been part of the 505 review process. Right?
Yeah. Yes. Is that going to be on the next agenda? Because, yeah.
So, Ali, could you do us a favor? Could you send out an email to everyone on the board asking if the same time on the 14th would work? And then we can figure out if we can have more people at the 14th. But I do know we had to shift some things around, so it's a full agenda and we want everybody there if we can.
Okay, and then my other request is if we do it on the 14th, I could have 5 minutes and I could give everybody an update on how the stormwater trial went.
Yeah. Of course, this
is so that's coming out something else. That'll be done.
Pretty live. It'll be like almost right afterward.
So if you could have Greg add that to the agenda, that'd be great. And I think we probably better plan on that meeting going at least full time and maybe even a little bit longer. Okay. Today will be shorter. So if everyone can be prepared for that, that would be great. Fall biannual preliminary review of code changes done.
Okay, so I've got a long time. I can really drag this out.
You could. Yeah.
There's 36 items. I don't know if we want to go through each and every item or not, but we can group the first batch are changes to 350. I found there's one additional change to 350 further on in the list that I missed to group with. Anyway, I guess maybe I'll just go through one by one. First one is update the ADA sidewalk construction minimum clearance from 36 to 48 inches. I guess that's what the current ADA standard is.
Is it ADA 44 inches?
Right now, in our code, it's 36, but it has changed to 48.
Oh, it is 48. It is or will be changing to 48. Okay.
It will be?
I don't know.
No, the latest... figure that we got is
48.
It
is
48.
Okay.
48
clear.
It was 36 in our code, 42 before the 48. Now it is 48.
Okay.
That's just to clarify. That's for obstructions in the path.
Right.
So it's 48. Now, what about the ramp itself? Because we have 3 foot ramps.
Yeah. That's also 4 feet now.
Is that four? So yeah. All the ramps are 4 feet and stuff.
All the accessible route needs to be 4 feet.
Okay.
Code language anywhere else that talks about the ramp?
Not in the transportation code, but there might be some in the buildings, or maybe in some of the. Is there anything in planning code? I'm not that familiar.
No, I'm surprised that they allow 36 inch width ramps. I thought they were supposed to be.
I thought there's 36 minimum.
Yeah.
It might be 48 now.
Yeah, all
it used to be. That doesn't look very long. Okay. Yeah. The details probably need updating.
Then definitely. Actually, we are not using them. We are referring people to the WSDOT standard. They have updated theirs. Ours is most of them are out of compliance.
So did you adopt that by reference in your code?
Not yet, unfortunately.
But you will be?
Yeah, what we are going to be doing is to have those standard details, kind of borrow them, make it the county standard as well. Unfortunately, the design group who heads this effort, the standard detail, they've been really busy this summer, but it is on their list of to do things, you know, to try to get. It is kind of important. We get a lot of calls from different consultants, and they wonder, you know, what to use, especially the ones that they already have the detail on the approved final construction plans. And we ask, we keep asking them to change those, you know, and it doesn't go well. And this effort, you know, with the ASCE and DEEP has a lot to do with the, you know, with the latest information we have.
I was gonna, I know we talked last time about having some kind of outreach for those,
yes,
those changes, so as many people know about it as possible.
Exactly.
It would be nice to even know, but I just thought of who would be a good member on the committee is Fulbright and Concrete. They're out there trying to form these things up all the time, and you know, usually they're cursing us out as the engineer, and I'd like them to see why these things look so funky, and why they have to be the way they are.
Actually, I have them on the list that I'm going to be sending to Dan, that we should have some contractor on the committee. At least, you know, one or two, they volunteer.
Yeah.
Can you pass that on to you?
Yeah.
At least get the heads up.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, number two is really just a Scrivener's error or clarification. It's not really changing anything, just that. We've got permeable, we've got medians grouped into, the code says that medians are permeable, and that section is under the flex zone, and the median is not in the flex zone, it's in the core loads section, so we're just fixing that. Number three, when we updated the transportation standards, the footnote that prohibited roll curb was inadvertently deleted, so we're adding language back in the code that says that vertical curb is required for all roads except for cul-de-sac curves. So that's still what the standard details require, so it's really not a change in policy.
Jim, real quick on the roll curb thing. Yeah. What about private roads?
There are no specific code language, but our standard details shows the standard here rather than
the other. With LID doing more low impact development, where you're looking at not even putting curbs in some cases, where it comes directly into the planner strip, is there anything different there? Because you're requiring vertical curb and curb and gutter, but in some cases when you're doing like rain gardens and you're trying to do a BMP like that, you actually don't have any curb. You might have an apron.
Actually, we would like the whole thing to be revisited. What happened back in 2006-07, the commissioners were approached by some neighborhood leaders that people go and park on the sidewalk because of road curb, and the commissioners were the one that directed us to change it to the standard curb, and they specifically told us that we are not to approve any road mods to change them back to road curb. But the issue is the attached sidewalk. Whenever you have the attached sidewalk, I think road curb would not be an issue. And in your case, if you have planters, it doesn't really matter whether you have curb or not in some cases. So maybe it would be a good discussion, and I'm not sure if during the work session there will be enough time to, for somebody to bring it up again so we can get some direction. The reason I'm saying that, you know, almost on a daily basis, there are requests that they want to get rid of the standard curve, especially when you have really narrow lots. You end up on an attached sidewalk, you end up with a roller coaster because you're going to have the driveway drop one after the other. There is not enough space for the landing on the top. So it would be very difficult to meet the ADA requirement.
Exactly.
With attached.
And then one other thing is that the most developers build the standard curb, and then when the homeowner comes in, decides where to put the driveway. And we have seen they keep cutting those, but we don't think it's a good idea because you end up with a lot shallower depth under the curb, and they settle. And they cause all kind of, you know, issue for the pavement, for the sidewalk. So if it's an old road curve, they don't necessarily need the dry bay truck. Yes. Although it is a little bumpy, but you know, you can put your dry bay anywhere and you don't have to worry about taking the curve out.
So staff might support changes to old curbs based on the fact that when people come in and cut in their driveway approaches, and the issues associated with them.
And ADA.
But and ADA issues.
As long as there is no potential for people jumping and parking on the sidewalk.
So a curb-type sidewalk would not be an instance where you'd have to
exactly. So if you could have a detached sidewalk, I don't see any problem with the road curb. And it would be good while we are doing this, you know, maybe you guys can suggest some changes we may. More work for Jan, but we can handle it.
What about old projects that had it approved? I've got one coming in next week that has road curbs still from previous old approval.
If they are vested, which is prior to, if I remember correctly, I'll give you the date, but I think it was
proposed as maybe even a road mod to do it. It's on a private road, so it's private roads too.
Yeah, but again, as long as you're vested with your decision, we still allow work to happen. If the decision allows it.
Eric, is there any issue when you go with old curbs that pushes the sidewalk back further to where it's supposed to approach into the right of way? Instead of having 6 inches, you now suddenly have 12 inches.
Not usually, because where you measure the back of that sidewalk, the rolled part, you take 6 inches in, and then it starts rolling. So you actually have slightly less traveled way because the curb's wider.
Okay.
It starts rolling into the gutter. So instead of the back of the curb changing where the sidewalk would be, the gutter line pushes forward a little bit.
Okay.
But you can drive on it.
So there's a lot of detail getting discussed here.
Too much.
The commissioners in a work session on the 16th.
Right.
So
right.
How do we want to address this?
Number four is
hang on, John. I think we need
to. This could probably take a separate track.
This could maybe be our comment on this. I would recommend that we revisit the requirements for no road curb on any roads because of other issues. So our comment as a board might be that we revisit this issue on future code revisions.
Number four is to update the table to reflect their new standard details, annual drawing numbers. Holly's group of transportation has been creating new standard details and all the numbers need to be changed. Number five is to amend some issues with stopping site distance in 350.030E8. So your Jaws has been involved in this quite a bit. And Ali, and they've had discussions about how to improve this section. And so this is what we currently have. I think there's still a little bit of work that we might be able to do on it. So I don't know how you guys. This is a tough to probably take up an entire meeting. So I don't know. You guys want to study this issue and come back with a recommendation?
It's more an engineering thing than anything. You know, what the difference in the grades, what the impact is, so I defer to Andrew.
It's following the procedures in the WASHDOT manual and ASHTO. So are we varying from that at all? Where did this one come from?
Yeah, actually, first of all, there are some numbers that have changed. Like, for example, 4.25 top of the car is now 3.5. You need to see. And then the 2 foot object height. We have it at 6 inch. But WASHDOT, actually, ASHTO had a 2 foot object height. And then WASHDOT had a policy to go back and forth. But they eventually, I think recently, they adopted the 2 foot object height, and they are following the same. So they are industry standards.
So it's actually less stringent than it was. If you're back to ASHTO, or WASHDOT had their own little thing for a while.
Yeah, also the 2 foot that has changed based on the new formula and new criteria, there is not a lot of difference. If I'm correct, Ejaz, you can try me. Actually, you can come forward. That's actually his changes, basically. I just commented on them, but he started this whole
quotation. Basically, the changes, the 2006 ASHRAE changed the object height from 4.25 to 3.5 feet, and became the driver eye height as 3.5 feet. So it's reflecting the change that was done in ASHRAE 2006. So we are not in compliance with ASHRAE and with BOSHRAE. So that's the change. And the other change that was made was this for safe stopping side distance. At one time, it used to be the object height at 6 inches, and then ASHRAE changed the object height to 2 feet. But BOSHRAE came out with a memo that they would still retain that 6 inches object height, and would retain that 2 feet height on a case-by-case basis. But recently they changed that, they deleted the reference to 6 inches, and as the standard object height is 2 feet. That's the reason.
So do you see this as a contentious issue at all?
No, it's just in compliance with that.
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
On the stopping site distance, the statement about taking degree and design vehicle classification into consideration, I guess I don't know of any situations where we use a different design vehicle than
it's basically, you know, it's the standard same as Washington State DOT, you know, for grades they have certain adjustments to stop the side distance, and after so we are just following Washington or ASHRAE. And the other thing is vehicles. Our code is based on 10 times let's say for side distance, it's based on 10 times the posted speed limit. That's what our code is. And BOSHRAE and ASHRAE have codes that's based on time gap, which is different from ours. And they have, you know, for passenger vehicles, it's certain seconds, and for trucks, it's right. certain seconds, right. things like that. And we are less than what BOSHRAE and ASHRAE has. And there could be cases where the number of vehicles, percentage of vehicles coming out of the side street is, let's say, trucked out of a quarry or mining or someplace where you have trucks exceeding 10-12% or something like that. So in that case, the design vehicle becomes a truck, and they have a much slower acceleration and things like that. And in ASHRAE and BOSHRAE, they have time gap requirements for the changes for trucks and that kind of vehicle. So what this is basically saying is, if there are situations where you have the design vehicle is different than passenger car, the side distance shall be per that design vehicle. Same thing with, you know, if you have a skewed intersection, it takes much longer to come out and make the turn, so side distance would have to be adjusted accordingly.
Great, thank you. All right, moving on to number six.
Actually, I have a couple of questions further along in that one, where it gets into the driveways in rural or urban residential areas. They have an exception for corner lots, but they don't. But I didn't see anything that set any kind of a minimum. Obviously, you don't want the corner lot accessing at the intersections.
Where are you at, Steve?
Section D.
Yeah, actually, we do have a what we call a corner clearance in another section of the code. It is in access management. It requires 50 feet of distance from the intersecting property line. So we do have that code separate, which is kind of related to what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not changing. Now the reason in here it says corner lot are exempt, because in one direction, in the direction of the intersection, you don't have a choice. You know, you may have sight distance in one direction, but not in the direction of the intersection, because you know people are going to be coming around. So, but the separation for the driveway is in another section of the code already.
And the other part there about driveways is, I agree, it's problematic because basically having to have 100 feet in both directions coming out of the driveway that somebody's backing out of.
That's exactly it.
And you pretty much eliminate on-street parking by having a 2-foot height.
Yeah.
So I wish you luck in figuring that out.
Yeah, actually, if you see in here, it says that this needs more discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Just because this assumes that you're facing the street and you can be 15 feet behind, which is in your garage, you know, to be able to see the 100 feet in each direction. And to be honest with you, we went back and forth and we don't know how to fix it, so we invited you guys to see if there is...
If you've seen other jurisdictions, the way they handle it...
They don't have it sometimes. Most don't have it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the easiest way to fix it is get rid of it.
Staff finds this section problematic since vehicles are normally backing out of driveways and invites comments on how to best improve this section.
I think
and I wasn't joking when I said
no, I think I would get rid of it. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It's hard to really...
Except that for driveways...
You can't enforce it.
This is very general for all driveways, but I think there are driveways, especially the long one, residential one, in rural area, that is extremely important. That you would have sight distance before you enter the road. So I think getting rid of it altogether, that means no sight distance at any driveway.
At a driveway.
All he says, driveways in urban residential areas.
Right.
Yeah.
I think what Eric's saying is strike this urban.
Okay, I see.
Restrictions on urban because you're putting restrictions on landscaping that somebody's going to do after they buy the house and they have no clue what this is. Mm-hmm. You know, the engineer can design it
the whole section
any way he wants to get the site license, but as soon as they put up the house and nobody gets a fence
then you got code enforcement issues with trying to keep landscaping and single family residential lots taken care of.
Private, mostly in the rural area, you have a private road. If it's a long one, it serves a bunch. If it's a driveway, it's pretty low volume.
Those are good comments, but again, you can make a formal recommendation. This is just going to work session now. So eventually, I think you're going to be putting some type of a memo together, and maybe that can be part of the recommendations.
Right now this is just going to work session, so we'll have an opportunity to provide that memo.
The PC work session is on November 7th, and the PC hearing is on November 21st. So, we'll see if we have another meeting before and get the material for the PC.
All right, ready to move on?
Mm-hmm.
Number 6 is just a clarification that the narrow lot standards allow 4 lots to be accessed by a driveway, but 350 still is limited to 3. You can still be able to get a minor deviation to allow more, but we want to make sure that it's still clear that 4 lots off a driveway is really the only code in the narrow lot standards.
How often does that come up as a minor deviation? Does the county ever deny it?
We have had a few lately. I mean, since the development started again, we've had a few and we do minor deviation. We don't want to change it to 4, then people are going to ask for 5.
Okay. All right. No, I was going to ask.
Fire marshal get mad at us.
Is that really the reason you don't want to change to 4 because people are going to ask for 5?
The more you put on there, the longer that the driveway becomes and more trips through it and more homes. And fire marshal has issues.
Fine. 4 is okay, but 5 is not.
5 could be in some situation could be
I'm
okay.
Bothered by the fact that you're saying, well, the standard really that we're okay with is 4, but we're going to say it's 3 because people are going to ask for 4 and we don't want to put up with it.
Right.
That's the wrong approach.
No, the thing is maybe I should have said it differently. You have it at 3, but you look at each situation. Having together minor deviation allows you to look at the situation, look at the location. Maybe 4 is not okay for all situation. Maybe I should have said that instead of saying, you know, like most likely we approve 4. But then when you get to 5 and 6, you know, it depends on the situation. What am I trying to say is that there should be some review rather than allowing it outright.
3 is okay outright. Uniformly across the board.
Right.
But there's some magical threshold at 4 that means, no, we need to review that on a case-by-case basis.
I'm not sure if that's the case. That
let's provide as much flexibility as possible. Mm-hmm. If 4 is okay, set the standard at 4.
Right. But, I'm okay with discussing it, you know, see the pros and cons. Usually the code that we have is follows some standards, you know, maybe, you know, there are a lot of history and background and some, you know.
Can you provide that background?
Not me. I didn't.
Why is 3 the threshold and not 4?
Well, maybe I shouldn't argue. I just go with what the code requires. If you want to change it to 4 and propose it, that's fine.
I want to change it to 4.
Okay.
Uniform.
Okay. 4 does come up a lot, and I don't know if you can see it from here, but in this situation
right.
where you have, because it's just an even number.
Right. What about 5? Is there any magic number about 4?
It's a good point. Why there isn't, but it is
why
an odd
number. Why not 12?
Yeah, why not
12? Fine, I'm good with
it. But see, the thing here is
yes, that not, Ken,
it's,
not
a, 12. It's a driveway. It's 12 feet in width within a 20 foot easement. It does not allow for any parking, and you know that the more houses that you get on there, the more parking that people are going to be wanting to do along there. The length of it gets longer, so the fire marshal probably wouldn't allow it anyway, since it has to be under 150 feet?
300. You have 300 with the turnout.
Rather, with the turnout, okay, so you have to have a turnout.
There's separate codes.
Right? Yeah. Right.
Then let's go to the standard the fire marshal would
require. Fire marshal probably allow, what, 2?
Maybe.
The fire marshal is going to be way more
than
how can the county allow something different?
The fire marshal doesn't necessarily. They have different issues. They have issues on turnarounds and width. Mm-hmm. They don't care about numbers as much. They need their access and turnarounds.
Yeah.
So the numbers.
I think if one side could provide enough evidence for one reason, and you maybe provide enough evidence for the other, then I think that's a reasonable discussion.
I'm troubled by the arbitrary nature of this. Mm-hmm. Why 4? Why 3? Why 2? Why 12?
Why 20 feet width for?
Well, let's provide the rationale for it. And provide as much flexibility to the private homeowner or developer as possible.
Yeah, the homeowners usually don't like them. Maybe the developers do, but when they come in and have like 5-6 homes on a small little driveway, and somebody having a party blocking the whole driveway, they would have issues, and we hear about them too. But those are subjective. I'm not going to be able to give you graphs and statistics and, you know, tables to show, you know. But we are basing all these based on the history and how we got here. I mean, you're welcome to propose it, and Jan can put it on the list for the discussion. So it doesn't
make... What you're saying, Ali, is that this... These codes here that we're talking about right now are based on subjective analysis and information.
No.
There's no analysis to it. That's not what you're saying.
No, but I'm not going to be able to show you the safety, you know, to try to argue safety based on numbers.
What's your rationale with
it? I just told you.
What is it?
The more house you have, the more driveways you have, the more potential for people blocking it.
What's your analytical data? What data do you use?
I don't know what you're looking for.
I'm looking for something other than subjective.
Like this, you're asking the same question that could be applied to any single code that's out there.
Yeah.
Any standard from a transportation standpoint, from an engineering standpoint, from a landscaping standpoint, from a site design standpoint. You're asking the same question that could be applied to anything.
Right.
You know, you open up that can of worms, then do you want all the data for everything else?
No, I don't think I am. Number one, you comply with state law, right? That's a given. Number two, you comply with federal law. For example, ADA and federal housing, right? Non-negotiable.
So maybe we can simplify this when we provide our comments back to staff, that we don't, the recommendation from DEEB is that it does not necessarily need to remain as is at three lots, and that we would suggest that staff take something forward to the Planning Commission and then to the commissioners that's different from three.
It's like some rationale for it, some logical rather than.
And I think it sounds like it's buried in history.
I think it's a balance of competing interests. I think, you know, some of the things we're not considering is the garbage trucks and utilities and how you can get all the utilities back there. You're lining up bulks in a small area. You have garbage days, for example. When you have one driveway that's serving, it goes back and serves eight houses now have to come out and put all their garbage in one area. And it can be a problem. So I think it's a balance.
So, Ali, maybe there are some statistics that you could provide us with. If you could look back at the last couple of years on the minor deviations that you've made. So a suggestion, maybe if Ali takes a look at where they've approved minor deviations over the last 2 years and how often they've granted those for four. So if you've had 20 requests for minor deviations over the last 2 years and you consistently approved four, then that kind of says something about where the standard perhaps should be. So that is a statistical piece of information that you could bring back to us.
Now, four is okay. Not five, right?
We don't know. What if it's four, if it's five?
No, I want to make sure.
What criteria do you use to make your recommendation?
When you're reviewing one of these minor deviations,
what do you use
for a criteria to review it?
Yeah.
If you have four lots that were stacked in your driveway, most lots are like 50 feet width. That's like kind of minimum for like an R1 5 zone. So if you had three 50-foot lots stacked, your driveway would be 150 feet long. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think 150 feet is the requirement for a turnaround?
Yeah. On public roads, 300 on driveways.
300 driveways?
Yeah.
Okay.
On driveway.
Okay. Well, maybe the 150 feet is a matching number with the fire department for stretching the roads.
Backing up.
Yeah.
So I think what the group's asking for is a little bit more information on the standards before we make a recommendation to staff.
Sure.
Okay, it's John.
All right. Number seven is a Scrivener's footnote. I don't think I'm even going to talk about that. Number eight, you're not going to
say wrong, that's all.
Number nine is not engineering. Number 10, number 11, number 12, and 13 are not worth talking about. Number 14 is just updating the grading code to reflect the 1,000 cubic yard categorical exemption. So that just got missed with the updates to SEPA. Number 15 is a Scrivener error. Number 16 is to change the reference to design requirements for permeable pavement from the standard details manual to the LIV technical guidance manual. Right now the code has a reference to a specification in the standard details manual, and it's been darn near impossible to come up with a neat, clean standard detail for permeable pavement because the design varies so much. So basically, we're referring to the LIV technical guidance manual. It's got a lot of information in there, guidance. It's not really hard and fast code because I don't know that you can create any code for a particular cross-step section for any given site for permeable pavement.
Jan, I wanted to back up a sec since we went right through it. Number nine. On page 10, you're simply changing that out to, you know, let people know that if you can't get 100% coverage in the employment zone, that, you know, other issues apply.
Right.
Why would you not just say subject to other code provisions and leave it at that? Because I know that there's going to be not only setbacks in landscaping, is there not going to be parking requirements, or is that what you're referring to as far as maximum lot coverage? I thought that would refer to building only. Or does that also apply to parking?
Actually, lot coverage is defined as structures. So,
structures.
So right. If that makes sense, I mean, there are more than just landscaping parking.
Right.
Or landscaping.
Landscaping setbacks. And I mean, there are other things that you have to have.
Sure.
You have to have your traffic flow, you have to have your loading zone, you have to have all kinds of other things out there. And so I think this is limiting
them.
Okay. Because if they see that, and then they go in and they design, and they say, oh, well, what about your parking? Well, you said I could get 100% of that.
Okay.
So.
Good point. All right, LID manual, any other comment on that?
Okay. Sounds good.
Number 17 is the clarified text in the rural zone category regarding the resubdivision of the rural plus the remainder lots. In 2011, we touched this section to allow a remainder lot with a residence to be able to flat off a small cluster lot when you have a developed remainder. And there was some faulty language in the code that appears to allow you to be able to start all over with this remainder and further subdivide it. So we're trying to correct that error. It was never the intention when that went through. The idea was to be able to just cut off the house on its own lot and allow no more development in the remainder lot. And we just have to say, hey, it doesn't exactly say that.
What happens when it gets rezoned and now it's urban density and you have this whole requirement from a cluster, and the idea was to maintain that density, so you're basically transferring the density out. When it gets brought into the urban growth boundary, should they be able to redo that?
That doesn't apply.
Okay, I just want to make sure there's not an unintended consequence.
Right.
I think we discussed that last time. Yeah. Let's see. Or a year or two ago.
It just says not further divided. It doesn't say.
Yeah. Well, let's.
Wait,
let's,
unless. The
well, let's see. Changes. On page 14, line item number 17, the previous land division. Until the affected property is included in the urban road.
Okay, it's covered. Good. Yeah. Good. There we go. So just wanted to check. Thank you.
So that's a long
piece of code there.
So we move on to, if we're done discussing that anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Number 18 is in the resource zone rural cluster, just added a referral to a reference to what the exception is to. It's really no conflict changes and added clarification.
Jan, line 29, I think it's now called Clark County Public Health.
Okay. Yeah, there were a bunch of changes made a while back, but
I
guess that's not.
You don't want Dr. Melnick coming down on you.
That's right.
Number 19 is to clarify that the 18-foot setback requirement for garages only applies to front doors. So if you've got a garage turned sideways and it's not your front, then you can use the 10-foot setback. Any complaint on that?
Nope.
Okay. Number 20 is clarified in the commercial and other zones that if you have an existing residence, we will allow you to replace that residence. We will allow you to build accessory buildings associated with that existing single-family residence. So that's come up before. We wondered if we should be allowing garages and all this other residential stuff. We've got a house in a zone that is not the highest and best use of the land.
What about accessory dwelling units? Is that different? What about an ADU?
ADUs, I don't think are allowed in that zone. So.
Accessory structure to the same family. The definition of the ADU is it's accessory.
I'll have to check. Well, that's a very good question. Off the top of my head, I'm thinking we would not want to go there.
Yeah, I don't know. It kind of depends on what its ability to actually. If you have an estate lot, that is just happens to be zoned commercial, the chance of it.
I know.
Yeah, I know too. And they're out there, and it's probably miszoned, really. But you can't really do a zone change out of commercial. Once it's commercial, it's really hard to go commercial right there. Because then you're taking away jobs. But the reality is, it probably shouldn't have been zoned that. It's probably like a little remainder in there. It's an estate lot. They're not going to tear down an $800,000 house, and they might want to put up an accessory dwelling unit. There's plenty of room for it. But it increases the level of nonconformity.
Okay.
I don't know. It's a good
unless it's allowed.
Unless it's allowed. But it's still increasing the level of nonconformity.
I didn't print out the whole section of code, so I don't think we allow any use in those zones. But it's a point of discussion. Let's see. Number 21. Explicitly list agricultural stands and markets and accessory residential uses as allowed uses in employment zones. Not much to say about that. Ag is allowed anywhere in the county. So when that code section regarding ag stands and markets was brought through the board, we wanted to make sure we listed it all explicitly in every zone. Number 22. Codify the number of queuing spaces for espresso stands. Right now, our code does not exactly specify how many queuing spaces you need for an espresso stand. We've got banks, we've got restaurants, we've got other uses. We don't have espresso stands.
6 seems really high. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just looking at how these things lay out and the ones that I've seen out there. And it's just a little corner. I don't know how you get 6 in there.
Right. Well, yeah, where did we're asking here.
What generated the signal?
Well, I think in the past, we've relied on like a traffic study. traffic generation.
Or they punted to a restaurant, and they have to do 10. Somebody said, I know in the city of Vancouver, it's 10. Unless you can show through a traffic study, I don't know how you're going to do that.
I think that's
you know, that's another $3,000 bill to get less queuing.
I was just comparing this to this new special standards for small coffee and food.
Yeah,
the difference between what's the difference between an espresso stand and a coffee stand?
Where you're right.
The small coffee stands are
small, and so this is. I mean, I'm not sure what to do with this even. Good. The coffee stands are limited to 200 square feet. The idea is that they're small. But, I've been driving around Portland and City of Vancouver, and I see some of these stands that have no queuing spaces at all. So, is it really an issue? Are people that stupid to stop their car in the middle of the road and wait for a cup of coffee? So, I don't know. Maybe.
I will,
because I'm one of the stupid people.
So, how many is reasonable for you? How far were you?
So, the Dutch Brothers on Mill Plain and near the old Kurt Warner Chevrolet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That one's notorious. So, I get coffee there just about every day. And if you get beyond 10 cars, it backs up into the road.
And
10
cars sit and wait for coffee?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And
they have
room
for it? Only at Dutch Brothers.
Now, those are bigger units, right? I mean, is the idea that they're bigger and they can generate coffee quicker so people will wait?
That one's a double window.
They have double windows.
And it goes pretty swift in the barista actually comes out to the car and takes the order, so it goes pretty quick.
My question comes back to what defines an espresso stand? What's the difference between a restaurant, a Starbucks, brick and mortar building, and an espresso stand?
Seating.
Is it just this 200 square feet that differentiates?
Yeah, we have a standalone coffee kiosk type.
And the timing that you spend there in the queue would be more like going to the bank and taking care of that kind of stuff. I mean, it doesn't take very long to make coffee. It doesn't take very long to do a transaction. I think I'm just kind of.
No, it's no different than going through a drive-thru for a restaurant. It can take as long to get a cup of coffee, depending on what you're ordering. So I don't know if it's the timing.
If you wait to just
not touch it for now. I don't know.
Then it's 10, though, right?
Well, but it's come up.
Well, wait, the code says that queuing spaces for espresso stands are established at the time of site plan review. And so there's been a couple of these that we've reviewed. Transportation staff weighed in and came up with an idea that 6 was a reasonable number. I've seen some other jurisdictions that use 6. I haven't seen anybody that expressly used fewer than 6.
And so there is some precedent out there with other jurisdictions on 6.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. But yet, in the follow up code that we're looking at, we're proposing 3, the small ones.
Yeah.
Right. So,
6 seems like a lot. I see those stands, and I don't see how you're going to get 6 on them a lot of times. They're usually little pocket things, and they have like maybe 3, and it goes in. And I mean, people won't just sit on the road, though, and block traffic.
So
you would think.
Let's get a clarification here. What you're referring to here,
Jan,
I drive up Starbucks that's in a building. What you're referring to back in this other section
is Dutch Brothers.
Is a Dutch Brothers.
Well, my thinking was that the espresso stand was a separate little small building. I didn't think of Starbucks having essentially a restaurant with the drive-up. I would, you could argue that's another wrinkle. You could argue that a Starbucks that's serving coffee and food inside their building is really a restaurant. They should have to provide tank.
If you're Starbucks, you're going to say, no, I'm not the same as that. I should provide 6. So unless there's some definition.
So what's the difference between what you're referring to here in number 22 and what you're referring to here in number 36?
Size, essentially. I know it's this needs some thinking.
It's sort of the same thing.
May I make a suggestion? I would recommend 3.
Split the difference.
Yeah.
4.
Well, that goes back to all the
questions.
Here's where you come up with you. You get a bunch of people around the square shaped
objects.
It's important to remember this costs people real money.
This
is their livelihood. This is the difference between a successful business and a struggling business. It matters. There needs to be some consistent approach to it. Maybe this or maybe that. I know there's reasons why. I just would ask that it be articulated and maybe included in some background or something.
And I don't think you're going to find any empirical data for something like this.
Two or three cars in there at any given point in time.
There's no
or you go to Dutch Brothers and James Park out from Walmart.
Part of it should be market driven too. You're going to have a store like Dutch Brothers, and you know that you're going to have a lot of demand. You're going to want to put more stalls in there. It's just like regulating parking. A lot of times you want to do more than the minimum because you know you're going to have that many people there, and people will leave. They can't find a parking.
Right.
Yeah, they got to service their customers.
So I think from our standpoint, we're just concerned if people are going to cause traffic problems if you don't have enough queuing spaces, or if you start obstructing. Even if you're on a site with an existing development with a parking lot, you're going to start, interrupting your drive aisles with people waiting, because they're getting out of line, or they're in a long line that's, going over the traffic aisle. So that's our interest in, creating safe spaces.
Or as determined at the time site plan review, could it be less than 6?
I think that's the idea. I think the idea was to sort of set a number out there.
Once you put a number in there, then you have to justify why it's less.
Yeah.
So I think if we're going to make a judgment call on it, there has to be some basis like backing up onto a public street. That's really what we're concerned about.
And you won't know it. You
don't know if
it's open.
Yeah, and
it's,
You know by geometry, demand,
it seems like somebody has to go and just look at what is privilege generating, how much is the serving time?
Mm-hmm.
Come up with some numbers there.
Do we require traffic studies for a small business like this?
We have. Now, there's a request to make them real simple for these small stands, so they wouldn't be requiring a traffic study.
Okay.
why wouldn't you have just
a kind of a pass-through,
a code that says
yes,
you know, they have to have three, or they have to have six if they don't have additional queuing space outside of the public right away. Like, I mean, because if they're going to a shopping center parking lot, the shopping center is not likely even open when they're doing the most of their business. So who cares if they back up into the parking lot with that? But you don't want backing up on the public right away. And that's, I mean, there's one on my way to work that about twice a week, somebody makes a left turn to get in there and hits the end of the queue and stops in the middle of the road.
So it does happen.
So it does happen, but there's no additional queuing space at that particular one. They don't have any place to go. If they make that turn, they're committed.
How many cars on the right away?
Three, probably. There's probably three in there, and the fourth one ends up half on the sidewalk, half in the road.
So
luckily, it's a wide road. So
in the interest of trying to move this along, I don't think we are going to solve this sitting around the table here. But what you're hearing from Dave is concern that you know, either if we do something, it needs to be based on some sort of real standard. Okay. Going back to what I said before.
Absent that, my vote is three.
Yeah.
That matters. Three. I vote for three.
We can also just not touch this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we can just leave it as it is. Permanent site plan review.
I think there has to be a minimum number, and it also depends on the people passing by. The higher the pass by, the greater the demand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a consideration.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's why we do a deferred site plan review time, because you can't really write a code for all.
But then, what do you guys review it by?
And then going back to Art's point, you've got somebody who has to put together development plans and do all the studies and not know if their business is even feasible. That's expensive to do. So if you did the three or as determined at site plan review, well, you're still in the same situation, aren't you?
Would you want it to where you're trying to justify a reduction, or would staff want to require them to add more?
That's
I like that
likely,
better.
Yeah.
Based on how staff justify the requirement for having more queuing, rather than the applicant trying to justify having less.
Then you wouldn't know what you might get.
Exactly.
Anyway, tough one.
Okay.
23, the further riding stable and pressure facility to be consistent with other code definitions. Number 24, allow reduced setbacks for retaining walls built internal to a subdivision. We had a week where we had a bunch of different people having issues with retaining walls. And so we proposed code language to fix the most egregious situations. So basically, if you are constructing improvements associated with the subdivision, then you can put retaining walls as opposed to lot line as the building code will allow you. The idea is if you're going to buy a lot in a subdivision, the prospective buyer is going to come in and see, oh, there's a retaining wall in my backyard, okay, I'll live with that, or if I don't like it, you don't buy it. The main reason this code was written was to protect people when, you know, if you're living in your house here and the guy next door builds a huge retaining wall right in your property line, then suddenly, you know, your view is blocked, your sun is blocked, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's the instigation of this. Well, there was an infamous wall in Philida that this code was written about. But you know, if you're building a subdivision, then the setback requirement probably shouldn't have a problem.
I have the same comment, just for all of you, more just kind of side conversation about shared infiltration systems on the property line. You look at these times when you're trying to do a catch drain, and when you have to put it 10 foot inside, catch drain doesn't really work. You still have the slope going off the neighbor's property. So it's a very similar situation. I don't know if we can catch that as well. And it's in stormwater code. I mentioned this one. I was going to mention the stormwater one, but I figured we're rewriting the ordinance anyway.
We are.
And I'd do it then.
Okay.
But it comes up a lot.
Right.
So
yeah, I think the reason for property line is the assumption that somebody could build closer
right
on the adjacent lots.
But if you're internal, then it's not an issue. Because now you're putting it in the middle of two other structures or plants. So that setback might apply. Yeah, and I still think we ought to allow catch drains that have limited capacity on the property line. So we can get rid of some of these offsite drainage. It's coming up a lot lately. Because you're building the lots up, and then you have a little spot at the property line. You're not going to put that system 10 feet in the middle of the slope. You need to put it at the bottom. So
yeah, just, you can propose it.
Yeah. But I don't know if we want to do it this time or not. It is an issue.
Probably do it with
stormwater. I think
water.
We need, we need to have clean water folks on board with that one. They are kind of in charge of the code.
We'll just continue to do it as a minor deviation for now. Until if it's a significant issue.
Yeah, I can talk to them and see.
Okay.
The
only thing I had
for
24 is just in 3A. Says when an exception under 1 and 2 above has been granted, and 2 and 3 are mutually exclusive, so you couldn't get an exception under 2 and apply it under 3. One is for short retaining walls, the other one is for tall retaining walls.
So. In easements. One refers to right-of-ways, two refers to easements, three is everything else.
Right, but the two is for retaining walls less than 4 feet. Three is for retaining walls greater than 6 feet, greater than 4 feet. So you can't apply an exception under less than code for something that's greater than that. Something doesn't work there.
It's too much.
Right?
Yeah.
If you're trying to clean it
up. Yeah. All right. I'll see you later. Hopefully, I won't have something explode on me. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if there's a reason for the easement piece in there, then it should be explicitly stated again, just to avoid any confusion between the two.
One other piece, prior to final plat, or if the owner owns, there's two situations where it can come up if the builder buys all the lots and then they want to put in retaining walls. If they still own both of the adjacent ones, they shouldn't have an issue either. So instead of just final plat, also if there's common ownership between the two lots, you should be able to put it wherever you want. Yeah, prior to the home construction. It's really when you're affecting your neighbor by putting a big wall right up against them. If you're doing it and you own both the lots, you can put it wherever you want in there.
All right. All right. Moving on. 25, 26, 27 are, do not require your review. They're not developed. Number 28, some trepidation about this. Recently, the SEPA code category exemption was raised for ag buildings from 10,000 square feet up to 40,000 square feet. And looking at this, realizing that somebody could build a big honking barn housing animals that's over 10,000 square feet, and we wouldn't have anything to say about it, and they would just have to meet, if they're in the urban area, they have to meet the 20-foot setback. But I don't know if this is ever really going to happen, where somebody's going to build a big, big, big barn real close. If it's in the resource zones, then you can be 50 feet away. I don't know. I can see this issue kind of saying, well, what's an animal confinement? What kind of barn are we talking about? And I can see it getting complicated, but I don't know.
A building right now that's 9,999 square feet, does it have a setback requirement? Just
nine
under 10,000 feet.
So 9,999.
Does it have a setback requirement?
Well, it would be just, if it's a building for agricultural purposes, it has to be 50 feet from property line in the rural area. Mm-hmm. If you're housing urban livestock, basically, if you have an urban zone or urban lot and you're having animals in it,
there's a 20-foot setback. That's all it is. And then you're not supposed to cause problems to your neighbor.
Ag buildings, at least when I built one, it was a 20-foot setback in a rural zone, 5-acre lot. Maybe that was 15 years ago.
Well, maybe, but now it's for some time it's been 50 feet for a long.
I got a lot that's 250 feet wide, 5 acres, long, narrow. You couldn't put this building on there.
Well, you can't fit everything.
200 feet is too much.
Well.
Why 200? It goes 250 well, if it's a foot less, 200 if it's a foot more. Doesn't that seem?
Yeah. Well, we can have a sliding scale. That's one of the reasons I knew this was going to get complicated. You know.
How many 10,000 per foot animal confinement dwellings?
Well, we haven't. We don't. I'm just thinking that if it ever happens, maybe it's not worth worrying about. You know. Maybe let's just strike this. Tell me to strike this.
Jan, please strike that.
Okay, you guys can tell me that. Nobody else is concerned about it, you know, it's DC or the board.
Oh, no, that's got a perfect example right there.
Yeah,
it's all. I mean, just right off of that, 50 feet's reasonable, and we've contended with that a lot of time, but 200?
Yeah, I can't wait to get this one appealed.
Yeah, and I don't think, we don't have a definition of animal feed yard either. You know, so you've got a roof over it. Is that a, I don't know.
It's not a building.
It's just a roof.
Yeah. You got chickens in the building.
Yeah, water
that
feed yard. Stuff is to
that's why I was trying to do a good thing, but it's going to be a problem, so maybe I'll just get rid of it. Number 29 will reduce the level of cell tower co-locates in any zone to a type 1. That's consistent with new state law, unless you're substantially increasing the. What's the language? The state law has language about. So basically, if you're just replacing, not substantive enlarging with co-locations, SEPA's not required, so we're going to make them type 1s instead of type 2s. Number 30, allow ground parking lots for parking or paving serves a little purpose. Right now, the code is like strict. It says paving everywhere. We don't know what to do when somebody's out, you know, forest lands. DNR came in for some trails and said, well, just move to pave your parking lot. It was kind of stupid when all your access roads are traveled. So.
Or you have just a fire access road around the building that doesn't serve any purpose. Would that be an example?
Well,
that could be bollarded, that wouldn't be used for access to the building, but provides for necessary fire access.
Well, that wouldn't be covered in this language.
Where would that be covered then?
Well, maybe we should do something, add something like that.
I think that would be excellent.
Fire access?
Fire access, yes. I'm involved with the project right now. Where would that may come up?
That's not a good code.
You know, and then there's upper storage.
Well, I think that's come up in the past. It depends on like, if you're parking your vehicles on it, that if you have gravel and you can't.
If you lay down, let's say a lay down area for light industry or business parties. Yeah. You probably still have to meet stormwater requirements, right?
Yeah.
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 But it's certainly a heck of a lot cheaper than paving for a low use, low volume. And it's just for maneuvering, for fire access or emergency access.
There is an exemption for water quality photos for low volume drying base.
There is, yeah. We had
no water quality, like last night, but they
could
actually
have any other. Maybe if we said something like outdoor uses that won't generate pollution generating equipment or that won't generate.
Yeah, once you guys work on that, that's come up in the past, and we've had to tell everybody, sorry, we got paid. Well, that's ridiculous. Can I just put gravel down?
Okay.
All right. Cool.
31. eliminate the county's three sign posting requirement for Type 3 applications. So right now, the applicant has to post a 4x8 sign, and then the county, we have to go out there and post those little 1x8.
That you guys never want to pick that up.
Well, the applicant's supposed to pick those up according to the code. I did
the blue signs?
Yeah, the blue signs, yeah.
Really?
The code says that, yeah. So,
doesn't anymore.
So I don't know, you know, personally, I mean, I've seen sometimes that this has benefit. Like, I had a project for a mine, and the mine was way off on a side road. Nobody would drive by it, and yet people that are affected by the traffic going by are affected by it, but they never drive up that road to see what the mine's going at. But, so I think in a few cases, maybe we make it an elective, you know, that unless, you know, maybe every site shouldn't have to have double little signs and it's all things sitting next to the big 4x8. But that's just struck me now that maybe we shouldn't just get rid of the carte blanche.
I just want to be sure, please, if I may, that I'm understanding what you're saying. 31, you're suggesting we eliminate the county's three sign posting requirements for all Type 3 applications.
Yeah, when there's a public hearing.
I'm sorry?
Type 3 would be like when there's a public hearing.
Yes. And you're suggesting we eliminate that requirement.
Right.
Because the applicant has the big 4x8 sign.
It's almost outdated. They changed it around. It used to be that you just did the three little signs, and now it's sort of the applicant's responsibility. It was like 4x8 monster sign that we have to do.
So you can read those big 4x8 signs.
You can.
Nobody can read the little small ones. So they've got a small site.
The question's not.
Right.
Yeah, the question's not the number of signs of the size. It's about visibility. It's where it's located.
In public notification, right?
Yeah.
Communication to the public. What's necessary to
bring them back?
Well, right now, one of the things is the code. We have to do this. The county has to set these small signs, even though the applicant also has to put this 4x8 sign. So many times it's kind of pointless when the county's putting the small signs because it's right next to the big sign. But in some cases, if you've got, I've used those small signs as kind of directional signs, you know, like somebody, you know, they may see a blue sign, they may be curious, and then if they pull off the road someplace, safely, they can get out and look at the sign and say, oh, there's an application going in up the road that I don't see from here. So maybe we can say something like, unless necessary for directions, or something like that.
I'm okay with just striking it. It seems like it's outdated. It seems like that was the old code section before they put the new one in. And the other one just is still in there.
Seems like the county could still discretionarily place these signs if they feel it's appropriate to notify.
Yeah, that's, I think it's a staff call.
Okay.
If there's really no restriction to public notice. The staff can do whatever they want to notify the public.
Perfect. Okay. Makes sense. Number 32, 33, 34, 35 are all in Highway 99 code. Number 32 would allow, there's always departures available in the Highway 99 code, but right now there's 11 foot walkway requirement in parking lots that I think is designed to.
I think a lot of that's if you have parking up to it to allow for the 3 foot overhang on the side. So you have 5 foot,
right.
So
I think that
that could be that 3 foot overhang
could
be landscape.
Good enough.
Is that what you're referring to here?
So we're looking at we're adding some language that says departures may be approved. I mean, we'll still keep the 11 foot there, but departures may be approved provided that a minimum of 5 feet unobstructed sidewalk width is provided and a superior landscape plan is provided. So
what's that
mean? Well,
do
side circles.
That's going to
superior. Things in code that say superior.
Well,
it's a good stand by a good.
Not by me. Okay, let's just.
Yes, by the way, say it.
I'm really good.
I think part of the idea is to make it like, you know, to beautify the area and to make it truly that you can see, oh, I can walk through this area here. It's an inviting place to walk.
And this comes up
The 11-foot width, yes.
Has
right
here. Yeah. Yeah. To be reduced to 5?
I don't think anybody's reduced
11
to 5
is
yet.
Wide a bit. Because you add stormwater,
yeah.
11 foot wide right through the parking lot.
Oh, yeah.
Vinco on Highway 99 and 99 Street, mm-hmm. they had a lot of problems trying to put that 11 foot walkway right in the middle of the parking lot. And they built it because it was required. So this provides some flexibility, but I agree that superior, I don't know how you can define that.
Why wouldn't you just say something simple like additional landscape
that's
provided? Just something very straightforward. You're looking for more, so just say additional. It's subjective,
Just like that last, Good last.
Jan, question. Not line 19 on that same page 32. Parking lot walkways, paved walkways shall be at least 11 feet in width.
Is that? I mean, that's excessive.
What's the thinking on that, please?
Can I take that?
Yeah.
That's so that there's a requirement for 3 foot overhang. This is when parking parks right up to the sidewalk.
But what if they don't?
But this one says departure may be allowed. Actually, it's changing that.
Okay.
If you follow
the
underline
is to allow a reduction to 5 in certain circumstances.
Right. Because right now what they're saying is that if you have a sidewalk or a sidewalk that runs through a parking lot, that you're assuming parking is going to be on either side of that. To accommodate the 3 foot overhang that's in the code on either side, that's 6 feet. So take that from the 11, you're left with the 5 feet clear so that people can actually walk down.
That makes sense. Could we, would there be a need to clarify
that
parking is on both sides or something like that?
And I think that that's what
is it
we're talking about here. If you have it only on one side there, you could reduce by 3 feet, I'm sure. If you didn't have any of it, you could just have a simple 5 foot wide side.
But it doesn't say that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you could just amend, provided the minimum 5 feet of unobstructed sidewalk width provided.
Something like
exclusive
that.
The whole thing is almost unnecessary because it's already in the ADA code that you need 5 foot sidewalks. So, and your clear zone already covers all this stuff. So it's almost, it gets confusing what is a parking lot walkway versus what's just your accessible route.
This drawing that's on here is in the code, so it's kind of demonstrating how it's used.
Yeah.
But I see a picture here, but it's not. There's no notations on it. There's no labels on it. Parking lot walkways. You're gone, but the next guy says, "I'm sorry, 11 feet wide." But remember, that was because "I'm sorry" doesn't say that 11 feet wide.
Yeah, what if it's parallel to it instead of the car down right
there? That's what, recently I got a pre-app and that's what they're showing, wanting to do. It's like 11 feet wide? Not really.
It's confusing.
Yeah.
So I think what you're hearing is just some additional, if you could add some additional language here that makes it clear in this situation that it's not just the drawing, but some text that goes into it.
Yeah, or if you said, exclusively.
Under suggested. Okay.
Well, when I said I'm saying unobstructed, that was the intent that cars can't obstruct them.
Right.
I'll massage that. See if I can do any better.
Paved walkway shall maintain at least a 5 foot walk aisle or something like that.
Well,
and as
what the thing is,
exclusive bumper required 3 foot bumper overhang.
Everything requires that. The Highway 99 code was one of the intentions is to make it a more pedestrian friendly environment. So part of this is not just it's not just to provide the minimum. The Highway 99 intent was to provide something that's creating inviting pedestrian use. Whether that ever happens, I don't know. But that's the intent of that code. So they want to make, there's other provisions in here where you have pedestrian scale lighting is required along this stuff, some landscaping. So it's more than just the minimum area to walk down. So I want to maintain that intent. I think it should be maintained, either that or...
What should be maintained, Jim?
The intent that it provides a little bit better pedestrian environment than the minimum code requirement.
Did you want to say maintain a 6-foot block aisle? Or
watch a massage board. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Take another look at this one.
All right, number 33, in the residential areas of the Highway 99 code, there's a 20-foot rear setback applied to all residential areas, which is a lot more than 5 or 15 that our regular code requires. So we don't really see a reason why people in the Highway 99 overlay, why their backyards have to be bigger than anybody else's. Because this, you know, in theory applies to existing lots. People call in and say, how close can I go to my rear property line and tell 20 feet? It doesn't seem right.
Hey, Eric.
Yeah.
Didn't you have some concerns about the residential portion of the highway?
I don't like any of it, but I mean, there's two other like pet peeve ones that I have. One of them we addressed because it was clearly the idea of the Highway 99 is to try to increase the value of the area. And when you had a minimum driveway width, or a maximum driveway width of 20 feet.
So the maximum driveway width was as well.
That we're addressing here. Yeah. But I think there's market-driven pieces too, like the...
Have you sent anything over to Jan for his consideration?
No, I did.
It's in here.
Oh.
One of them's in there. But I have two other ones I'll bring up and get everyone's opinion on.
Okay,
but
cool.
They're linked.
Okay. So. Number 34. Is to remove some driveway requirements for duplex units. Right now it says driveways for duplexes shall be shared at no greater than 20 feet in width. And then in that same code section, there's a photograph of what's assumed to be a nice duplex design, and they have separated driveways. So there's basically a conflict in the code. So I say we just get rid of that. Number 35 is to remove driveway requirements for single-family lots. It's basically in its entirety.
So that takes care of that.
That takes care of that issue. But there's two other little things related to that, though. And again, it goes back to the housing type that's in demand in like higher-end neighborhoods. It's usually a three-car garage. There's this barrier, basically, to get over a certain level of price in a house. It pretty much has to have a three-car garage. Otherwise, people aren't willing to pay that price for it. So by doing that, you're limiting the use of three-car garages. The other piece that does that is the front facade. They have, in the Highway 99 code, it's all about the lower level. I mean, I can see you don't want all garage, but if you have a two-story house, you're probably going to have more of your front garage than if you had a ranch. So that percentage, I think it's like you can't have more than 40% or is it 50% garage front on the...
I'm not familiar with that.
I can send you something on that if you want. So this is just in draft. I'll email the whole board.
Please.
The other part is saying that your front of your house, your garage has to sit 2 feet back from the front of the living space. So
has to
be 2 feet back. So again, you have a situation where your front, your house sits here, the garage has to sit back 2 feet from the front door. Most houses that I see in nice neighborhoods, the garage still sits up a little bit, and the front door actually sits back, and your living space sits back. So I don't know why we're trying to social engineer style. And, you know, there's certain things that are in and certain things that are out, and it's going to change over the years. Market demand is going to dictate that, and builders are probably not going to build a house that no one wants to buy. Otherwise, they're not going to be in business for very long. So it kind of weeds itself out.
Why don't you send around your concerns here? I'll send that out to some of our builders that we work with and see what they're calling.
Those are my three main ones, where the garage thing... The front facade. I can see a facade. I think that has a place because you don't want it all to be garage. If you have a little tiny house, you don't want three-car garages and then 5 feet over here. But if it's two-story, you have a bigger, you have more area to work with. So I think it should be the whole facade, not just the lower level facade. So.
Regarding the driveway width on corner lot, that could be a safety issue if you make it too wide. You know, we struggled through that, and you know, people wanting because they wanted to three-car garage and a wide driveway.
Again, it depends on volume. I mean, in a local residential access, you don't have that kind of volume where it's that big of an issue. But
350 will still apply, even if we take this out.
Yeah.
You know, there is a problem with 350 also because we get a lot of complaints about that. Axel just told me that another one has come in.
All right, and that brings us to the final one, the biggest one, maybe. Do you have special standards for small coffee and social bands? This actually came from Board Direction.
Did you crib this from somewhere?
Not really.
No.
I mean, looked around, but yeah, wasn't able to find a whole lot of other guidance. You know, I've seen the six queuing spaces. I've seen that in a couple codes, but you know, and then we drive around. You know, there's a particular circumstance that this issue came to light. And in that particular circumstance, six isn't going to fly. You know, there's a stand and there's not six available spaces. And we're trying to accommodate that along with other possible circumstances. So,
who wants to go first?
You.
Okay. I didn't know where the 200 square feet came from. Is that a standard dimension or size?
There aren't. I looked, you know, through literature, went to websites to see if there's a real standard pre-made espresso stand size. There isn't. Like 180 is kind of, I saw a few times, 180 square feet. But a lot of these places will manufacture a unit for you, whatever size you want. 200 is like, well, it's a number that the building code uses. Under 200 square feet, you don't need a building permit.
Right.
So it seemed handy. Maybe 200 square feet is too big. I don't know.
For
what we're trying to do.
Sure. Next line down, maximum of 3 coffee and or food stands are allowed for these standards per development site. So we have the same standard for 5-acre site as we would for a 40-acre site. Hazel Town Center or a CRC or out east on the Walmart site, however big that is.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to have it. I mean, I'm just bringing it up. I'm not saying it's bad or good, but it's one standard for, you know, a wide range of development sites.
Right.
It also would stop what happens in Portland with this.
Right, and I think we're ready to start drafting.
Yeah.
You know, limiting to 3 is like, well, you know, it's a whole can of worms, you know, going through or along the Portland allows.
Mm-hmm.
So we just, you know, as a biannual, we don't want to do this. You know, we don't want to address those big issues. So we're trying to keep it small.
With only one stand, allowed to have drive-through facilities on that 40-acre, 60-acre development site. So it seems a bit limited. If you can meet all the other criteria, why wouldn't you be able to have other ones allowed for driving facilities? C2, that was just the conflict with the queuing that we had already discussed. The only other comment that I had was on page 36, line 13. Frontage improvements will not be required. Dedication of right of way may be required. When would that be required? What? I mean, isn't right of way dedication all day? Correct me if I'm wrong, but
he doesn't know about this, so don't be mad.
I have a proposal. What it should say is to provide opportunity for the residents. Because I know these are small and can be moved, but if you have it in a place that it's gonna be a right of way and road widening, it's a problem. So instead of saying dedicate right of way, we have a verbiage in other places that say provide, you know, some type of a setback from the potential right of way. For example, if you have a 40-foot road and you know this is going to be a local access road that requires 46, you provide another 3 feet.
But most
in the future right of way.
Okay, so you
otherwise you probably have you may lose the whole site because
Okay, so I can see that where you would want to then observe the setbacks or anything like this from the future right of way or the classification of road that it's on, but not the dedication of it at that point in time. These are 200 square foot facilities often going on other people's property that the person who's running the facility doesn't have any control over.
Right.
That.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good point.
So
yeah, our quote is in any development, even Washington State University, if they don't increase the PM peak tree by 10%, they don't have to do anything.
Right. Okay. That's why it's funny that this was even in.
Okay. Well, yeah, I was in a hurry. Well, I you know, it's like, oh, I'm good now. That's good. So that does seem a little extreme now.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll strike that.
Thank you. And those were my only comments.
All right.
Otherwise, it seems reasonable.
I had a couple of big ones, as Mike also. Just for clarity, you've got the title heading is coffee and food stands, and then the first sentence you say coffee stands and food carts.
Oh, that was supposed to be fixed.
Okay,
thank you.
The other one you've got on page 37, line 17. The water utility review letter got back in.
I'm sorry, what page are you on?
The snow requirements.
Snow requirements.
Page 37.
Okay. Page 37, number 6. Water utility review letter got in number 3. We've got a water and wastewater narrative in the narrative. So just, I wonder about wastewater. Near and dear to my heart, so.
Basically, they would be able to have a holding tank. What wouldn't make them connect to sewer? So how do you handle it?
I mean, but you've got, you're making a requirement in the narrative from to talk about wastewater.
What
so
they're
so the middle, you have, I would think you'd have something.
Why would you need
to do that? As far as
actually, it's, there are a lot of requirements by the health department. I think it is best to talk to them because we just went through some type of a stand in Pacific Park.
Yeah, they wanted to connection to the
have a small, would, yeah.
Just there's got to be some plan for wastewater disposal and everything,
right.
Whether it's
yeah.
holding
yeah.
tanks or a septic or
yeah,
yeah.
more
yeah.
or volume.
And that's what this is intended to do. Maybe it should say a plan for water and wastewater. Instead of
yeah,
or you can say
water,
the
even with
health
water,
department
requires holding tanks and those little carts and stuff. A lot of those are just holding tanks for the water.
Yeah, and then you have the water utility review letter. This is an area that it's not served by public water, or if it's an undeveloped site that is clear that to accommodate something like this, you might not want, you might not making the connection to the water and the road to extend it onto the site might be a little over and above.
Right. Right. And the plan is not to require that. So I guess that's just strike that number 6.
Okay. Any further comments?
I just Google map and satellite the Dutch Brothers, and it looks like it's bigger than 200 square feet. They're typically a little larger than.
Right.
Yeah.
It's
like
a
25 by 12 or something.
The idea is for these to be mom and pop mm-hmm. operations that don't have a lot of money and want to get their foot in the door. And maybe it's not fair. You know, it's like, well, if you've got money, you have to spend it.
Yeah.
You know? But.
Okay, so.
Cool, right. And do a full review, then we'll have the parking lots like they have in Portland.
So what I've got, John, is items 2, 6, 20, 22, 24, 28, 30, 31, 32, 35, and 36 are all ones where we had comments and that we would like to see how you move forward with that language.
Okay. I don't think you need to bring up all the rest of that.
No. No.
Unless you need to do some significant change after the workshops.
Yeah.
Tom, I'm sorry.
It should be in the be
okay.
in the notes.
Okay.
The items that I had that I heard comments on were number 2,
okay.
number 6, number 20, 22, 24, 28, 30, 31, 32, 35, and 36. And there were minor comments on some of the other ones, but not asking for any changes.
Okay. So these will need additional work, and so as they, I will work on them. If you want to see them again in an interim before the next meeting, or
you can email them.
Great. And if you have comments on them, let me know, and we'll put something together that's consolidated.
All right.
All right. Okay.
All right. Thanks for your input.
Thank you.
Any other public comments? Okay, the meeting's closed. Did you get all of that?
Yeah,
I did.
So I want to pass some of the information about this.
Do we change the day next meeting? To November 14th.
No, we're going to send an email out and ask if people can
everybody.
Okay. So the information should go back to all. Why don't you talk to Greg about that? And then I think we should go out to the entire today. Just send an email saying, here's what we found out.
Okay.
You too.
Just for both of your.
Okay. And